This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Calvin Massey, who's a professor of law at the University of California, Hastings College of Law in San Francisco. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you.
For those of our listeners who aren't themselves constitutional scholars, could you just give us the briefest of backgrounds of your own in constitutional law?
Well, I teach federal constitutional law, United States Constitution, regularly to my students. I've done that for a number of years. And I have written, along with two of my colleagues, a book on the California State Constitution some years ago.
Okay. And that would include Article 16, Section 3.
It does.
So what's your reading of the import, the function of Article 16 in the California Constitution?
Well, it's worded in very broad language, but the California Supreme Court hasn't interpreted it that broadly. Article 16, Section 3 says in terms that no money shall ever be appropriated from the state treasury for the benefit of any corporation, et cetera, that's not under the exclusive management and control of the state. But that's not the way that the California Supreme Court has interpreted it. Despite the apparent breadth of that prohibition, the courts have excused its application where money is spent for a public purpose.
And there's plenty of case law supporting that interpretation.
Well, leading case is one called California Housing Finance Agency against Elliott, decided in 1976. And basically, the reasoning there is as long as that private institution is performing a public purpose, any benefit that it receives is merely incidental to the public benefit, and the spending is constitutional.
Okay. Did this issue come up in the case of some tobacco money?
Could be. As I mentioned earlier, I specialize really in federal constitutional law.
Okay.
I don't regularly teach a course in California state constitutional law, and so I cannot tell you for sure whether that issue has come up in the context of tobacco money or not.
Okay. Now, are you very familiar with Prop 71 and its extremely detailed provisions?
No, I am not.
Oh, okay. One of them says that the provisions of this measure, except for bond measures, may be amended no earlier than the third full calendar year following adoption by 70% of the membership of both houses of the legislature, etc. This was designed, as far as it seems obvious, to exclude the control of the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee established by Prop 71 and the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, also set up by that initiative, from state control. Are you saying that under the current reading of Article 16, Section 3, that doesn't really matter as long as a public purpose is ostensibly or actually being served by that stem cell institute?
As long as the money that comes from the state treasury is expended on an agency or private institution that is performing a public purpose, then there is no constitutional infirmity in the mere fact that the recipient of the state money is a private entity.
Even if it's if it's not under the exclusive management and control of the state as a state institution?
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's what Article 16, Section 3 says in terms, that it can't be appropriated from the state treasury for the benefit of any institutions not under the exclusive management and control of the state.
Right.
But California Housing Finance Agency against Elliott and other cases have said that's not really a problem if the money is spent for a public purpose.
Okay. And
so if it's given to a private institution that's performing a public purpose, the rationale is that the benefit that the private corporation is getting is merely incidental to the public benefit that they are delivering.
So essentially an organization like the Red Cross, if it's doing disaster relief, for example,
yeah,
would be eligible for these funds without any problem.
Yeah.
And so would a stem cell institute, presumably.
Yeah, I would presume so, presuming, making the assumption here that stem cell research is for public benefit.
Right.
I suppose we could imagine stem cell research which is clearly not for public benefit, in which the results of the research produce patented gene cells or other things which are under the control of that private institution for private financial benefit.
What are the criteria that distinguish public purpose from private purpose in the context of this article? Is there case law on that as well?
Generally speaking, the dividing line would be what you might instinctually think it to be.
Right.
That where the results of the public funding are to produce particularized benefits that are not widely disseminated with any palpable benefit to the public at large,
right,
is not a public purpose.
Right.
I would assume stem cell research, assuming that the research that it produces is not captured for the private financial benefit of the entity that is being funded,
right,
would be for public benefit.
What if it's captured for the private benefit of other institutions, public or private, including, say, the University of California or a biotechnology company? In other words,
well, those are quite two different entities.
Right,
California,
right,
would be an entity that's plainly under the supervision and control of the state.
Right, meaning, all right.
Presumably, even the financial benefits that the University of California would reap,
right,
would be indirectly for public benefit.
Right.
Because those financial benefits would operate to defray the cost of the University of California and relieve a burden upon taxpayers,
right,
to that extent.
So in that case, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, I would think so.
Let's say that the publicly financed money, for example, with the Red Cross, the money is spent on, you know, bandages or food or water for the disaster victims.
Sure.
But in the case of the stem cell initiative, the money is going to be spent to do research, and the direct fruit of that research will be, or the maybe even indirect result will be, intellectual property that can be used, and the ownership of that intellectual property is not, in my understanding, is not clearly defined within the context of Prop 71. In other words, that's still up for grabs. It's
well,
still an issue.
As it plays out, then, it may be that it's not for public benefit. I express no opinion on that.
Right. But you're saying that it does need to be, and
oh, yeah.
In order to be exempt from the plain reading of the law,
yeah,
that would say that,
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Okay. The only thing that exempts anyone from the plain reading of the first sentence of Article 16, Section 3,
right,
is that the recipient, if a private entity, is delivering public benefits. And if it's not delivering public benefits, and in the case of stem cell research, that may well depend upon issues that have yet to be resolved.
Right. Does that distinction carry through if, for example, public money is used by the Institute for research, the research redounds to the benefit of a private company, which then, of course, will want to commercialize that product and deliver a public benefit in exchange for money. Does that same distinction hold true then for the biotechnology company that
well, it will depend upon whether that's perceived as a public benefit or not.
And who does the perceiving and determination?
Well, that's ultimately going to be the California Supreme Court.
Okay. So in the situation that now exists, where the terms of the public benefit have not yet been defined by the Stem Cell Institute, how would the Supreme Court be able to decide whether there's a public benefit or not? Or can it make, it can't, obviously can't make a contingent decision, contingent on what the Stem Cell Institute decides, can it?
It can only decide in the course of the litigation that's presented to it on whatever record has been developed below in the trial courts. And so I don't know of any litigation that has developed, but
this case, in fact, was brought in the first instance to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
The case we're talking about. There is a case that's now being brought by the Life Legal Defense Foundation on February 23rd. It was filed. And it argues that the funding for the Stem Cell Institute should be enjoined because it's in violation of Article 16, Section 3, and the Supreme Court hasn't yet, the California Supreme Court hasn't yet decided whether it's going to hear the case itself or send it back somewhere. So there is no prior trial record at this point.
Well, that's probably a difficulty with that litigation, is that the record's not fully developed.
Right.
It's in the abstract, and it seems to me that it would be very difficult to determine whether they're, put it this way, there's no doubt a public benefit in stem cell research, disembodied and considered abstractly.
Right.
To provide public money to foster scientific intellectual inquiry into stem cells and how stem cells may be used to combat various diseases and defects that afflict the human population.
Right.
There's no doubt of public benefit.
Right.
But the devil always lies in the details. And I don't know that the details have been adequately fleshed out.
So is there...
I'm not as intimately familiar with the progress of what has come in the wake of Prop 71, which I gather is the proposition designation for the proposition that approved all this
right
amount of money for stem cell research.
Right.
So I would be unable to hazard an opinion as to whether or not this is public benefit or not until there was a more complete exposition of how exactly this money will be used and what it will capture.
Right. Well, within the context of the law, is there a presumption that an organization saying it's going to do this research into the biomedical science of stem cells, is there a presumption that that's for the public benefit, or do they need to demonstrate it? In other words, who has the burden of proof to establish that this is in the public benefit? Is it
I can't tell you that, because as I said at the beginning of this, my principal specialty is federal constitutional law.
Okay.
And so the details of who would have the burden of proof on that point, I'm not sure. I'd have to go dig it out myself, and I don't know the answer off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for establishing this background and the important point that the actual reading of the law allows for organizations operating for public benefit, although we, of course, haven't resolved totally how that's resolved, are really not limited or restricted or prohibited by Article 16, Section 3 in the California Constitution.
I think it's true. I think probably the thing I might end with is to say that there clearly are a lot of issues to be resolved with the vast amount of money that's been appropriated for this purpose,
right,
and authorized for this purpose.
Right.
And given the tremendous value of the intellectual property that results, there are clearly a lot of issues to be resolved as to what exactly will constitute public benefit or not.
Right. What I guess I'm trying to find out, and what I guess you've said, is it's indeterminate. There's the money hasn't been spent yet. The discoveries haven't been made. The intellectual property hasn't been assigned.
Right.
And therefore, it's hard to. There's kind of this procedural problem here that people are asking for a judgment on the basis of a determination for which there's no evidence one way or the other yet.
I think that's right. My hunch would be that the record is inadequately developed to know whether at this point. Essentially, what's being asked is to challenge the entire proposition,
right,
being facially invalid.
Right.
And it seems to me that the general rule with respect to facial invalidity is if there are so many applications of the rule or the law that would be unconstitutional,
right,
it might be struck down on its face. But I don't know that one can say that. It is entirely possible that there could be a vast number of unconstitutional applications. It is also equally possible that with appropriate administrative safeguards that there would be very few unconstitutional applications.
Well, in fact, you've established that really or determined to be for the public benefit, then it's exempt from that provision. And if it isn't for the public benefit, then it's not.
Exactly.
And that's a function that, as you said, the Supreme Court is going to determine once the record is more developed whether or not it's true. Could this then influence the decision of the ICOC to declare itself, to put into its own regulations provisions that would establish more unequivocally its public benefit? In other words, if it said, all intellectual property developed under this project will either inure to the University of California, or if it goes to private biotech companies, it will still be owned by the state of California and licensed to them. Could they do that? And if they did that, would that establish them more thoroughly as a public benefit corporation?
I don't know whether the ICOC has the authority to do that, but assuming that it does.
Right, it has the authority to determine what kind of intellectual property disposal is made of of its discoveries.
Well, then certainly regulations along those lines, I think, would be very helpful to establishing the public benefit.
Okay.
So I would guess the short answer is yes, that would be helpful in establishing public benefit.
Okay, good. All right, well, thank you. You've been very helpful in establishing the state of the law here in this area, and I want to thank you very much. And maybe if as the record develops more fully and there's more to actually comment on, we could talk again and get the benefit of your counsel on that as well.
All right.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.